The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Amanda LaPlante, and you are listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. With me today is Dr. Michael Twyman, board-certified cardiologist and biohacking cardiologist.
Yes.
Always interesting conversations with Dr. Twyman. We're happy to have him back on the show. And I want to give a shout-out and a thank you to AFC Urgent Care of Brentwood for underwriting our programming. Is it the flu or just a cold? That's the question that nearly every adult will ask themselves this winter. My program, Get Real to Heal, is underwritten by AFC Urgent Care in Brentwood, and their physician-led team is ready to diagnose your cold or flu using their in-house lab 7 days a week. AFC Urgent Care reminds you that cold symptoms usually include a sore throat, runny nose, sneezing, and coughing, whereas flu symptoms are more severe, set in more suddenly, and include fever, chills, muscle, and joint aches. When you need to see a physician without an appointment or after traditional hours, visit AFC Urgent Care across from Brentwood City Hall on South Brentwood Boulevard. So big thank you to them. And we are delighted to be getting away to Puerto Rico for where you're beta testing a new retreat.
Yes. So thank you, Amanda, Carly, Charlotte, and my wife, Kim, for attending. You know, we decided to come down to Puerto Rico, get away from the cold in St. Louis, and try to build up our vitamin D levels and our mitochondrial function. So we're kind of beta testing it over the next couple of days. And saw the sunrise on the beach today, had a lovely breakfast, and a little bit of an intro to the light water magnetism, and today we're going to chat a little bit about heart health.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I do want to touch back on, you know, having just mentioned the flu, and I know a lot of people are afraid to travel right now, but getting away might actually be a good thing.
Yeah, if you can not catch the flu on the plane and get to where you're going to be, you know, getting a lot of sunlight and building up your immune system with the sun is going to be key.
Absolutely. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about heart health today. Actually, we're going to talk a lot of bit about heart health today. So February is Heart Health Awareness Month. And where would you like to start with this topic? I know heart disease comes up a lot in conversation.
So heart disease, unfortunately, is still the number one thing that takes most people out. And heart disease is top of the mind right now with the recent blues player having sudden cardiac death on the bench. It's still a little bit too soon to know exactly what happened with him. They haven't released the details, and they may not necessarily because of medical privacy, but obviously Blues defenseman came off his shift and passed out what it looked like on the bench, but it was much more serious than just passing out. Fortunately, they had a great medical staff there, EMS, you know, the training staff and the physicians were immediately available. The player received bystander CPR immediately and actually required a defibrillation, so they had a automatic defibrillator shock him and restore a normal heart rhythm and, you know, saved his life.
So we're seeing more of the defibrillators, the AEDs, right, if I have that right, popping up at malls, at shopping centers. And, you know, if something like this happens, what can be done in that moment? What do we need to know as the average person that's walking around and sees somebody just collapse?
So the first thing is, you know, if you're not medically trained, is activate EMS, call 911 and try to get somebody there as soon as possible, but alert other people that there's an emergency, you know, so-and-so is not awake, and just be yelling. So hopefully somebody that's in medical training or knows CPR can go get the defibrillator, bring it to the patient, and start. You know, even if you're not fully aware of how to do CPR, you know, they've changed the guidelines. You don't need to be doing mouth-to-mouth with patients. It's pressing on their chest is key to circulate the blood around to the brain while you're waiting for the defibrillator, because sometimes it's really going to require a defibrillator to jumpstart the heart back into a normal rhythm. But unfortunately, 9 out of 10 people who have sudden cardiac death, they don't make it to the hospital. You know, it's high-quality bystander CPR is usually the main difference. For every minute that they don't have CPR, they have a 10% mortality risk. And so, you know, the faster you can do CPR, get a defibrillator, use it if it's appropriately to use it, because it just does. It's automated. It knows if it needs to shock the person or not. That's the key. Just recognize that there's an emergency and activate the system.
It's important information to know and to have a grip on. And I have to say, a lot of people were just very surprised because of his age.
Correct.
And this can really happen to anybody at any age. What are some ways that we can be screening or know our risks?
So that's what's the scary thing about an athlete. You know, somebody who's highly fit, highly conditioned. You know, this is unfortunately, you know, something that can't always be prevented, but you can screen for it in the general population. You know, the number one type I typically would recommend for somebody over the age of 40 with, you know, some risk factors for heart disease is a CT coronary calcium score. It's a painless 5-minute CT scan of your chest looking for calcium in the walls of your arteries. You have calcium in your arteries, indicates that plaque is present. The higher the score, the higher the risk. Again, I don't know the exact details of what happened to the previous player, but typically in younger patients, it's something known as hypertrophic cardiomyopathy or really thickened heart. That's the thing that causes these abnormal heart rhythms. That usually gets found earlier in age, especially if they do certain screening, EKGs or echo ultrasounds of the heart, they would have picked that part up. But once you start getting 35 and above, the more likely cause is a coronary event where a plaque ruptures. So they have not yet said that the player had a heart attack that, you know, causes, but that's the number one cause for most people suffering cardiac death is a plaque ruptures in the artery. There's not enough nutrients, oxygen going to the tissue, and this abnormal heart rhythm happens.
How does the plaque form?
That's a really good question. You know, inflammation is probably the main thing that drives it. So inflammation, your immune system, wants your immune system to turn on if you have an infection, but you don't want your immune system always turned on. And if your arteries get scratched and damaged with inflammation, your body's trying to repair the damage. Cholesterol is part of that repair mechanism. The cholesterol now is getting damaged. It's getting trapped in the artery. It keeps building up. And somewhat like a pimple or a volcano building up in the artery. And if you don't shut off the inflammation, it eventually has an acute event where it ruptures.
Wow. Hey, and you also mentioned another possibility, perhaps at a younger age, thickening of the heart wall.
Correct.
What would cause that? Is that a genetic issue? And what's driving it?
Yeah, that one's typically a genetic one. It's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Not extremely common, but, you know, the cardiologist practice, you're going to see this a few times in your career. And it's usually the number one thing that, you know, a young high school or, you know, college kid has, you know, a sudden event on the field, and it wasn't from a trauma event. It's typically hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. There could also be another case where the person's coronary arteries are general abnormality. Usually arteries come off the aorta in a certain way. Sometimes it comes off through a different pathway, and that artery is just more at risk of having a heart attack.
Okay. Now, when we talk about all of these potential conditions and issues, we're not talking about heart disease, though, per se. That's a totally different issue. And what defines heart disease? Can you break it down for us? For some of us, it's a little abstract.
Right, and it, you know, definitions do matter. And sometimes heart disease can be the point of term that you have any problem with your heart. The way I typically use it is more as that heart disease means that there's plaque building up somewhere in the 60,000 miles of blood vessels. But, you know, you can have congenital heart disease when you're born with it, and it doesn't manifest until later sometimes. Most congenital stuff gets picked up in childhood. But typically, if a person's 35 and above, it's something you've acquired through life.
Okay. What are the greatest risk factors for heart disease?
Age is number one, and you don't get to discount that one. But smoking, high blood pressure, abnormal cholesterol, especially if you're doing advanced testing and have high particle number, a lot of the small, dense particles, the smaller the particles that transport the cholesterol, the more risk that those things get oxidized or damaged and get trapped in the arteries. So you need to know a little bit more about what's carrying your cholesterol than just what your cholesterol is. Diabetes, of course, can be one. And then just being very inactive, obese, those are probably the top 5 or 6.
Okay. All right. So you can be doing everything else right, and if you're not exercising, you'd have an issue, right? Or you can be, yeah, so it's really all of the, as you talk about the legs of the stool.
Right. So, I mean, it's typically, you know, how you feed the system, how you move the system, how you deal with stress, and how well you sleep. Sleep probably the most important because that's when your body's repairing the cells that make energy for you, those mitochondria. But exercise stimulates the mitochondria, and the stronger ones survive, the weaker ones get taken out. But, you know, exercise, yeah. Maybe a little bit controversial to say is that, like, if you don't sleep well, you probably don't want to be really hardcore exercising. You need to dial in your sleep first, because if you're stressing your body with exercise and not sleeping, you're potentially going to do more damage to yourself.
I'm glad that you said that, because that comes up in a lot of health coaching conversations with my clients, and I always say you have to be getting some sleep. If you're not getting enough sleep, and yeah, you're just doing more to fuel the inflammation rather than helping things.
Correct.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so beyond that, We also talk a little bit deeper in your practice about something called biohacking. And you've been on the show a few times and kind of given us an overview. But for anybody that's new and listening, break that down.
So, I mean, I think the term biohacking is overused sometimes. I just use it more as a health optimization is the way I define biohacking. You know, doing some type of experiment on yourself and seeing what the response is. So maybe you change up your diet for 30 days or you change up your exercise routine and seeing how does it affect you, because there's no perfect diet for everybody around the world. You know, you have to test and not guess. And so ideally, you maybe do some blood markers before you do these tests to yourself and see how it goes. But I usually tell people if they're going to get into the biohacking thing, first look at your light environment. Control your light. So how you're spending time outside versus the time you're spending inside under artificial light, that's where you need to start your biohacking.
And with technology being ever-present in our lives, artificial lighting being what it is now, you know, how much do you think that's driving the health conditions and concerns that we now see in our modern world?
I think it's probably the number one thing. It's just now getting more quantified that how much effect is being caused by the technology that we all use. And, you know, it's great that we can connect with somebody around the world with this technology, but there's probably a health consequence of using all the technology, especially at the wrong times of day. It's light information programs your cells and hormones a certain way. And if your body's getting messages at the wrong time of day, you don't release hormones that allow you to sleep effectively. If you don't sleep, you don't regenerate. So I think technology is great for what it's used for, but it just needs to be constrained in the time of day that your body's supposed to be using stuff, and mainly that should be daylight hours.
So that's one of the reasons that we find ourselves here in beautiful Puerto Rico. By the way, you can check out the videos for Get Real to Heal live on Facebook at Get Real to Heal and also on Instagram at Get Real to Heal. And if you were to go and look at our feed today, Dr. Twyman and I were pretty much all dark, but we thought that if we had to pick a view, you'd want to see this ocean behind us. And one of the reasons that we're down here, though, is to get back to nature and reconnect with the natural circadian rhythms. And what's that going to do for us?
I think that's the key. This is something my wife and I have been talking about for a couple of years. Is, you know, yes, we have all this knowledge about biohacking and functional medicine, but sometimes it's really, you know, show people, don't tell them. You have to come and see for it yourself and to see this is how you might, you know, help your body regenerate. So how you reconnect with nature, you know, this morning we're up at sunrise, standing on the beach, having a great conversation, you know, showing people that, you know, nutrition is important, but the time of day is important. We wait until sunrise. We try to have a high-protein breakfast to reset certain hormones in our bodies. And then, you know, we're only inside just so you guys can see this, and the pool is too loud, but otherwise we're going back outside and sucking things over with. And then, you know, we're having conversations on the beach about, you know, how important water is in your system, you know, how cold therapy can lower inflammation, help you sleep better. So it's show, don't tell. That's the whole idea of this retreat, is reconnecting with nature, because your body is pretty smart. Your body will be able to repair itself if you get out of its way.
We are truly the human body. The more that I have recovered from my own illnesses and learned more and more from brilliant people like yourself, your wife, Dr. Charlotte Meyer, who's also here in the room with us, the more that I realize we are this beautifully designed machine. It's pretty amazing. And Mother Nature, whatever you believe created us, didn't make any mistakes. And so if we can reconnect with that, I think that really is where it starts. Yeah, getting back to all of that. So you've got this retreat that you're beta testing, and we're going to talk some more about that in the future, I'm sure.
Yes.
But people will be able to follow you on?
So on Instagram, I'm Dr. Twyman, Dr. Twyman. Same handle on Facebook. And then my main website is apollocardiology.com. Have more information there about my practice in St. Louis.
Yeah, and be able to watch out for these retreats that you're going to be offering for your patients.
Correct.
In the future.
Yeah, we're still kind of come up with the name for it. Something about reconnecting with nature is going to be the key line.
Yeah, I love that. All right, and you know, and I do notice a difference when I get down here. I do sleep better. My digestion is better. All of the things are better when I'm getting a little more sun and I'm naturally tapped into those circadian rhythms, and that's such valuable information that you've shared with me. So thank you for that as my doctor and a colleague. All right, let's talk a little bit about seasonal eating, too, because this was something that came up on the beach earlier, and we were talking about that, and you broke down the science behind it.
Yes. How much science are we doing today?
I don't know. It kind of just makes sense, but I feel like it helps for people. You know, I tell people all the time in my family, I'm like, well, you shouldn't, you know, if we're eating this, and it's really a strawberry, and it grows in summer, it's probably not really something we should eat in January, and, you know, but it helps for a doctor to explain why.
Sure. I'll go for the information part of it, because I think that's the way that makes sense to me. So your mitochondria, the things that make energy in your cells, are decoding information from the environment. Food is information for those mitochondria. So if the phone grows your food and you eat the food, your mitochondria digest the information. It knows how much sunlight it took to grow that food. And so if you're eating food that was grown somewhere where there's a lot of light, so say you're eating blueberries from Chile and you're in St. Louis in January and your skin is getting whatever it is, 5 degrees in St. Louis right now, I don't know. But if your skin is cold and you're not getting sunlight on it, but your gut is getting a lot of sunlight from the food, that's a mismatch of information to your system. So this is the reason that seasonal eating is important. Up until 150 years ago, you wouldn't be able to eat foods that didn't come from the local environment. You know, if you couldn't go outside and gather it, hunt it, or canned it from earlier, you wouldn't have been eating it.
Right, right. And yes, that mismatch, if we are a biocomputer, we're essentially putting in the wrong software, the wrong programming. Yeah. All right. And so then talking about, getting back to nature, and we were talking earlier about earthing and grounding, which normally I think would have been reserved for conversation at festivals.
Yes.
But it was really interesting to hear two MDs talking about that.
There's a lot of information about earthing and grounding for lowering inflammation. The earth is negatively charged, and you basically can dump positive ions out of your system and get negative ions in. It's not saying that you can just eat electrons from the earth, but you probably are going to eat less food if you're connected with nature, barefoot in the sand. From a cardiovascular standpoint, it helps with blood flow. Your blood becomes more like red wine, less like ketchup, less stickiness. But the kind of not so good thing about potential earthing grounding is with the technology coming, that technology sometimes will jam that signal that's coming from the earth. So you might ultimately end up doing more harm in future earthing and grounding. So you just have to kind of stay aware and be reading up on kind of the changes in technology, how it might affect earthing and grounding. But for right now, in most places, you can still get it.
Okay, and when we're talking about that change in technology, for anyone that's maybe wondering what the heck that means, we're talking about 5G?
Without getting too far into the weeds with it. Yeah, mostly the 5G, the cell networks, I mean, the Internet of Things, they need high bandwidth to talk to themselves. So that high bandwidth can interfere with the way the mitochondria are sensing the environment. And there was a big trial that came out last year. It's funded by the NIH, the NTP study. It was using 2G and 3G cell tower frequencies, and it was testing mice and rats, and it definitely had a biological toll on those animals. It was increasing cancers, specifically heart cancers in the rats.
Heart cancers.
Those are not common in humans.
No.
And if it was doing 2G and 3G, there's more concern that as the higher powers go up, we're going to have more issues with this. So I'm not an expert in this area, but just mostly stay aware and see how things are going in your environment. If you're sick and you can't explain it, look at what technology that you're exposing yourself to.
Should we be scared?
No, you should be informed. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
But, life is inherently dangerous or risky. We're all not going to make this out alive at some point. But the technology, it's tremendous how it reconnects. But I wouldn't have known who you were if somebody didn't come to me and want to do a documentary. This wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have been able to find it unless you found it through Facebook. I mean, it's great the way it pulls people together who are like-minded. But know that your technology has a health consequence if you use it at the wrong time of the day.
That's great peace of mind. All right. So you mentioned earlier, a couple things I want to touch on. One, you mentioned that we are recharging with the sun. We're recharging our battery.
Yes.
Can you talk a little more about that?
That mostly comes out of the work of Gerald Pollack, who wrote a book called The Fourth Phase of Water. Your body is mostly water. And if the water that your mitochondria make is more important than the water that you're putting in your system. So not too much is basically your mitochondria reverse photosynthesis. You make water, you're breaking down the glucose for energy, and then you're breathing out carbon dioxide. But water that's in the mitochondria can be charged up from sunlight. Light is present all day long. That starts the process of basically making a battery in the water in your cell. And then during the midday when the UV radiation comes out, that makes the battery bigger. So, the more sunlight that you can get exposed to, the bigger battery that you make, likely the less food you need to eat to fuel the system.
Okay. So you mentioned cold therapy earlier in the show as well.
Yes.
That sounds terrible, but tell me more.
So cold therapy or cold thermogenesis, some people might also know Wim Hof, the Iceman, it's kind of the biggest one that's kind of brought back to the popular conception of what cold therapy is about. But cold therapy can help lower inflammation, helps with recovery. And it just helps with energy production in the cell. If you want to come to one of our future retreats, I'll go down the rabbit hole as far as you want about teaching you how cold therapy makes the energy work better in the mitochondria. But as you say, the cold therapy can be very healing. Yes, you may not like it at first, and it's something that you have to kind of build yourself up to, but there are different protocols you can do that help you kind of get a little bit more used to it. But once you're cold adapted, you can run around St. Louis without a coat on for 5 to 10 minutes. You're not going to freeze, and generally you're going to feel euphoric. You're going to have high endorphins, and cold therapy is beneficial for the majority of people.
Okay, but here's my question. So if I'm down here, and I've been blessed to travel a couple of times here recently to warmer climates during the cold, icky season back in St. Louis, and when I go back home, is it going to be hard for me to readapt? Are there things that we need to know going from climate to climate?
I can tell you just from experience that, your systems run either on light or they run on cold or they run on both. If you kind of charge up your batteries a lot in Puerto Rico, you go back to St. Louis, you're going to have a good boost for, 4 or 6 weeks in certain energy markers. But personal experience is if you go from, being outside 90% of the time, and you go back to St. Louis, it's cold, and you're inside 90% of the time, and you switch up your light environments that quick, you're becoming more sensitive to your environment. You're going to feel completely different doing that switch too quickly. So even if it's cold in St. Louis, I plan to go outside and get as much sunlight as I can, at least through my eyes, to try to keep that circadian rhythm as matched as possible. But you're going to feel very different without the UV radiation in St. Louis.
Okay, so that's one level of kind of the question, but also switching back and forth seasonal eating, right? So I'm down here, I'm eating tropical things because I'm in a tropical climate. When I go back to St. Louis,
it doesn't mess up that much because it's all about the match of the information. So if your gut is getting cold foods, your skin's getting cold foods, you're fine. It's just that you have that mismatch. So if you're eating, pineapples back up in St. Louis, it's time your body is not going to necessarily like it as much.
Okay, so that's going to really bum my son out.
Yes.
He's going to be very upset about that.
Yes. And this is more of a caveat for that. If you're sicker, you need to do more. If you're healthier, you can get away with a lot.
Yeah. Well, and we do deal with a lot of autoimmunity in our family. It hits multiple generations, his included. And so it seems like that's becoming more and more prevalent. Autoimmunity is on the rise, right?
Very much.
And what are some of the other factors that you think are driving that?
I mean, there's just a pandemic of vitamin D deficiency. Vitamin D is not a pill that you pop to raise your level of it. So vitamin D is an important hormone that your body makes in response to how UVB radiation hits your skin and turns cholesterol into vitamin D. Without vitamin D, your immune system does not work nearly as effectively. Your heart has different vitamin D receptors. So if you have a weakened heart, you have high blood pressure, you very likely have vitamin D deficiency. And without optimal vitamin D, your immune system can be overactive. And then you turn on yourself, and wherever you turn on yourself, you have an issue. The most common thing, people's thyroids get affected, so they develop Hashimoto's. 20, 30 years ago, Hashimoto's wasn't that common. I don't know the exact difference, but 10% of people's thyroids when they're underactive with Hashimoto's 30 years ago. Now it's like 95% of people whose thyroids don't work well with Hashimoto's. So there's just a huge uptake in autoimmunity, likely just because of the way the environment's changing quickly. There's no way the genes change this fast. It's usually a genetic predisposition why you're getting autoimmunity. For the most part, it's a mitochondria problem. Your mitochondria are breaking in your immune system, and your body's turning on itself.
Well, and the main factors driving that are, to reiterate?
Yeah, it's the indoor lifestyle and not connecting back out with nature. It's mainly a light story. Foods do have a role, but if you don't get the light right, you can eat perfect food, but if you have poor engines, it doesn't matter how good the fuel is going into your engines.
I like that analogy. Wow. I want to double back to earlier in the show, we talked about, you mentioned the coronary calcium score test, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yep.
Okay. Is that covered by insurance?
Typically not. In the state of Texas, it's covered for everybody. They had some kind of law that passed there, but all the insurance carriers had to cover it.
Go Texas.
Go Texas for that. But the calcium score test, it's usually about $100 at most freestanding places in St. Louis. You take 5 minutes, and you get the answer that day or the next day. If your score is zero, your risk of a heart attack or stroke is extremely low. If your score is higher than 400, that's a very high-risk finding. You want to find somebody like myself or somebody skilled at interpreting these tests to kind of help you figure out why did you get that plaque in the heart in the first place and what you can do about stabilizing it ideally start reversing it.
I want to touch on this really quickly because we're just about out of time. But, you know, when we mentioned that a test isn't covered by insurance, a lot of people just instantly shut off.
Sure.
Thoughts?
Well, the thing about insurance is like fire insurance. Your house burns down. You want insurance there to pay for the house because you didn't save the same amount of money for your house to rebuild the house immediately. But insurance should be used for more huge events that you couldn't pay cash for. You know, the calcium score test is an investment in your health. Invest in your health because it's the only asset that truly matters. So even if your insurance company doesn't pay for this test, you need this information. So find out if you're zero. If you're zero, you're low risk. If you're high risk, find myself, find somebody else to work with, try to help reverse that risk. Because sudden cardiac death, you know, the number one thing that helps with it is prevent it in the first place. Because once it happens, unless you're lucky enough to have a team standing by, 9 out of 10 people aren't going to make it.
And I love that you've made the switch in your new practice, Apollo Cardiology in Clayton,
yes,
to really focusing on prevention and doing these advanced tests and screening and really digging in with people on, you know, the four legs of the stool and the basics and getting back to it all.
Right. I mean, you know, I love my, you know, cardiology colleagues that I train with. And, you know, if you're having a heart attack, yes, you want them to be there because they are going to be the best in the world at saving you. But I personally in training, and, you know, you just don't learn how to optimally take care of your health so that you don't end up in that place in the first place. It's not a problem that you're deficient in medication or you're deficient in the procedure. You're deficient in nature. So reconnect with the nature.
I love that. I love that. All right. And so once again, how can people reach out to you or follow you online? How do they get in touch?
So I'm on Instagram, Dr. Twyman. My office, apollocardiology.com. Those are probably the two easiest ways to reach me right now.
Fantastic. And this is Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal. I am an integrative health coach. I do have the blessing and privilege of working with wonderful doctors like Dr. Twyman at Apollo Cardiology. If you'd like more information on health coaching service, reach out to us. Reach out to me. AmandaLaPlante.com is my website. You can reach out on there and reach out for a free consultation anytime. I'm happy to answer any questions. And for this and other episodes of Get Real to Heal, you can go to SoundCloud.com/GetRealToHeal. You can also find our videos live on Facebook, Facebook.com/GetRealToHeal, and on Instagram at GetRealToHeal. And I just hope that you go out and make it a great day. Connect with nature. Even if it's a little bit cold there, wrap yourself up and get out and get a little bit of sunlight on your eyes. I know that's one more thing that you talk about, really really getting out, like seeing the sunrise, seeing the midday sun.
And the sun is your GPS clock. It resets your system and you make hormones the way your body needs it.
Great final words. Thank you so much, everybody. Go out and make it a great day. Thanks for listening to Get Real to Heal. Mm-hmm.